We start, as you know from your program, we have two parts to this closing session. First part I'll introduce now, and then I'll introduce the second after we're through with the first. Neil Chandler is going to be reading his short story, The True Order of Basketball. Those of you who were here a couple of years ago, you read excerpts from it as it was in the... You didn't? Ah, well, I was misinformed. Neil is the Director of Creative Writing at Cleveland State University, which sounds like it's very impressive, but he moans about it all the time because it's just an administrative job that keeps him from creative writing rather than helps him. Isn't that right? So now we get the truth from him, that he enjoys the job. He's also the author of a book of short stories named Benediction, which is the title of a short story of his that appeared in Dialogue. I think it may be perhaps the most talked about short story in Mormon history. At least I've heard more people refer to that story, always laugh about it, it's so funny, and tell other people you must read this story. And those of you who remember when it came out in Dialogue, fiction, you know, usually goes uncommented on in both Dialogue and Sunstone. And this was the most commented article in that issue and many issues after it. So he is a worthy writer. He also wrote a play called An Appeal to Lower Court, which was the cover story of this issue of Sunstone, on sale in the lobby. That's $2 still. You're waiting for it. This is the clearance price. We're not going lower. This is a thoughtful, intellectual play. It takes the setting of Helmut Huebner, fictionalizes it, and deals with the issue of the struggles of the bishop who had to excommunicate him to preserve his congregation during Nazi Germany. And it deals with his ethical struggles with his wife, with his high council, with everyone. And it's one of the most thoughtful Mormon plays that have ever been written. And I recommend you to read it. So we'll turn the time over to Neil, who's reading an abridged version of his short story.
We're calling this a short story because nobody wants me to call it a novel.
No,
no. Absolutely. Good. Well, if you're fiction lovers, I hope we can maintain that relationship. We'll see. We'll see. The True Order of Basketball. This story is a little long for an occasion where I got to read and you are supposed to stay awake. In fact, the brass plates version I'm going to read to you this evening is considerably longer than the golden abridgment I saved for Gentiles. So I'm going to begin with summary. The first third of this story takes place during the last minute and a half of a basketball game. Now you must understand it is a regional playoff game between the Mayfield Ward and Seven Hills. Mayfield had made it to the regionals five different times, but in all the years they'd played in the league, they had never managed to get past Seven Hills. Not once, never even made it close until this year. This year was different, and the reason was a new player, a brother named Rudy Greenwell. In the fall of that year, Brother Greenwell had moved his family into Mayfield Heights, where one night at practice, he just walked out onto the court. He was rangy and sullen in the volatile manner of high school all-stars who have languished on college benches. He had an angry talent and something irredeemable to prove. This is how the new season in the Mayfield Ward became a whole new dispensation, a whole new testament. And how, with only seconds to go in the game, Mayfield found itself down a point, but only one, not 20 and not 10. Rudy Greenwell got the ball, and he took the game in hand and broke for the basket. He dribbled through the lane and catapulted up into the air with a grunt with the ball, with four arms and hands stacked one above the other in his face. Then, high in midair, as one defender slammed into his side and another hit him head-on like a truck, Rudy moved the threatened rock as neatly as a card trick from his right hand to his left, guiding it effortlessly through the forest of strained and splayed and straining fingers to set it surely, softly, neatly in the hole. Silence. The sound of Pentecost. Now, at this point in the story, it's important that you know something about Dennis Kopecky. Dennis played point guard for Mayfield. He was not a talker. Basketball was his passion and his only remaining bond with religion. And as Rudy sank that incredible shot, he raised his eyes and palms to heaven. "Sweet Jesus," he crooned. And just as everyone was coming to, was recognizing through the heavy veil of history, of improbability and years of unrelenting jinx, that Mayfield had actually won, the referee's whistle split the din. A foul on Mayfield. Now, this was no ordinary official, I should tell you. Small and wiry and ageless and looking in his black and white stripes like some convict cost accountant, he was a stranger to the team. His cowboy drawl and infuriating calls had convinced Mayfield that he was also a stranger to the game. The foul he called was a technical. Dennis Kopecky had taken the Lord's name in vain. And so with half a second to go, the Seven Hills captain sank two foul shots to put away the game. Mayfield had lost again. It might as well have been a rout. Out in the parking lot, the Mayfield team caucused in anger and despair and then broke up. Finally, only Rudy remained and the Mayfield coach named Arlen and Melanie Sarvis, who was the team's principal fan. Married to a bench player, a man Rudy had actually displaced in the lineup, she was still a cheerleader. Or one might say, a cheerleader still. Sweet and childless at 30, she still had the perkiness, still had the thighs. And that's where we're going to join the story. Melanie Sarvis stopped to console Rudy before she left. "It's a crime. You know that, don't you? The man's a criminal," she means the referee. "That's all. I mean, I never saw anyone who wasn't on television shoot a basket like that in my life. Really, Rudy? Really?" she said, this with a kind of hush. "It was just amazing." Then she squeezed his arm and looked for a long time into Rudy's eyes, long enough to make him think, before going off to join her husband, who was already backing out the car. "Go on home, Rudy. Forget it," said the coach. "I'll call the league tomorrow." The calling would be futile, an empty gesture. Arlen knew that now, and he knew that Rudy knew it. "I'm okay. I left my ball inside. I'm going to get it, then I'm headed home." "Let this go," Arlen admonished, and he was tempted to wait there in the lot till Rudy came back again. But he didn't wait. Maybe he should have. The lights in the gym were still on. When Rudy had found the pebble-grained orange McGregor with his initials on it, he dribbled up and leave when he heard a kind of echo. "You're staying late." It was the rogue official. He was carrying a bag in his right hand, and he pulled up the ball with his left, tucking it against his hip. "Good game. Great shot you had there at the end. Pretty as a shuttle landing." Fresh from the shower, with his thinning hair combed back wet, he'd shed his stripes and cross trainers for unevenly faded jeans and western jacket and boots. Rudy eyed the Cretan, but he wasn't speaking to him. Instead, he kept on across the court toward the exit. "Ah, thank you." toward the exit, but when he'd nearly reached the door, he changed his mind. "Look, mister," Rudy whirled with sudden indignation, "you robbed us. You stole that game for Seven Hills. I hope you know that." "Well, not exactly." The crank was calm. "You boys more or less rob yourselves. You got talent, but you're out of control. Got to learn decorum." "Decorum?" Rudy couldn't hide his disgust. This was a playoff game. A rinky-dink call like that is just wrong. It's immoral. You don't decide an important game on a candy-ass foul. The scorn in Rudy's voice was sulfuric. "Well now, you're right about one thing." The Cretan seemed to be warming to this subject. "Basketball ain't no Sunday school. That's why you gotta have decorum." "You mean the cursing thing?" "I mean rules, ceremonies, etiquette." "Etiquette?" Rudy's eyes narrowed to closure. "Takes a whole lot of etiquette to play this game." Rudy shook his head. "What are you talking about? You've been reffing long as I have. You learn a thing or two." The guy was serious. He was seriously mental. Suddenly, Rudy turned and launched a set shot at the nearest basket. It fell shy, hitting the rim, which bowed and then propelled the ball up and back in a high, leisurely arc, so that Rudy needed only a couple of unhurried steps forward to catch it again. "Pretty shot," said the ref, "but short. You got a minute? I'll show you how to shoot a shot like that. Show you a little something about the game." Rudy was incredulous. "You're going to show me how to play basketball?" "Well," said the ref, "I could understand your reluctance. But I'll make it easy on you, son. We'll just play horse, and I'll spot you one." Does everybody know what horse is? Horse is a basketball game you play with two people. You each start with four horses. And the lead shooter shoots a basket. If he makes the basket, the second shooter has to make that basket. If he doesn't make the same shot that the first shooter shot, then he loses a horse. However, the first shooter doesn't make the basket, then the second shooter takes the lead, and he tries to make a shot, and the first shooter tries to make it or lose a horse. First one to lose all his horses loses. That's the game. That's horse. That's what we're going to. "Nah," said Rudy, very irritated, "I don't want to play." "Ah, come on now. You ain't so bad. You could almost like to hold your own." The head case paused and looked at Rudy with a squint of appraisal. "Or maybe not." All right. One game." Rudy capitulated. "Go ahead, you're up. But I don't need any spot." "Suit yourself." The ref put down his bag and dribbled leisurely to the opposite side of the court, where he turned and launched a set shot almost identical to Rudy's. His ball climbed high and also dropped short onto the rim. But instead of rebounding, the ball rose listlessly to settle on the top of the backboard, where it paused and tottered uncertainly before dropping finally through the hole. Jeez. Rudy could only shake his head. Dumb luck. This time his own set shot was on the money. He split the strings. They were still even up, but the head case was calling the shots. Just how long you've been a ref? Rudy had no intention of allowing this guy unbroken concentration. The official, who was considering his shot, held up a moment and thought, "Can't exactly say, a long time." "And this etiquette thing, that's from back when the game was supposed to be better, right?" It was hard for Rudy to hide his disdain for phony nostalgia. The official went back to weighing his shot. He seemed irritated. "Rules is rules. Ain't no statute of limitations in round ball." The stranger flexed and released. The ball rose and dropped through the hoop with barely a sound. The man could shoot. It's old way of thinking, he conceded while he retrieved his leather. "So it's like a tradition?" Rudy tried a new tack. "But think about it. I mean, you play the game. Be straight with me on this. What kind of tradition is this cursing thing anyway? A rule like that's not natural." He drew a bead on the hoop and hit the shot as well. "No, sir. The head case was not in agreement. Not hardly. Laws is natural. Gravity is natural. But rules is mostly just cooked up. So how can you decide the game on a phony call? Didn't say nothing about phony. But you admit it, it's not natural, right? That's the beauty. Basketball ain't just some game. Basketball's more like a vision, like the whole gospel made manifest. Leastways, just about the best illustration anyone ever come up with. Don't you see? One side you got yourself a wilderness of natural laws, just like you were saying, and other side you got a house of made-up rules. And in between them two, you got basketball. Rudy couldn't see. He just stared. It's a study. It sure is that. The head case hit his shot, then stood in place and watched reflectively as the ball bounced under the basketball. Of course, he conceded, used to be better. Used to be something else. All right. Rudy knew it. He'd known it all along, the nostalgia thing. He hated those sports talk geezers who dial up radio shows to whine about everything present and fawn over everything past. You tell me next that Chamberlain and West would have taken O'Neal and Jordan, and how back then they were in it for the game and they didn't care about the money, and I'll tell you that's a load of crap. In the old days, mister, there was a whole lot more on the line than just money. In the old days, your game was your life. Rudy narrowed his eyes. The old man took his stare. He wasn't backing down. What do you know about them days? You mean the 60s? I mean the old days, the beginnings of basketball. Oh, Rudy had been on the wrong track. He had to think, and he stalled for time by carefully lining up his shot. Some guy in Massachusetts invented the game, the 1890s maybe. Isn't that it? The official rolled his eyes. Well, there's the value of education for you. What you don't know is bound to come around sooner or later and smack you up the head. No wonder you boys lost. No one invented basketball in Massachusetts, nor anywhere else neither. Basketball wasn't invented. It was revealed. Rudy's meticulous set shot didn't even catch the rim. It hit the glass wide left and fell harmlessly to the floor. He was staring. He was down now, 4-3. He was not catching on. Wasn't no 1890s, neither. The official had tucked his ball against his hip again. It was back in the dispensation of the fullness of sports. The what? Rudy felt tongue-tied, felt he was repeating himself. Ain't nothing on this earth, the man continued, don't have roots in Revelation. You can't be serious. Don't you never read the scriptures? Of course. Ain't nothing irritates God like them that fails to acknowledge his hand in all things. I know that. And you was thinking maybe he made an exception for basketball? The official in frayed denim looked disappointedly at Rudy and folded his arms. Rudy backtracked. You're trying to tell me that basketball was a revelation right here on the American continent? The official lined up his ritual shot again, fired and hit. The damn thing was automatic. So why don't I know about this? Why isn't it in the Book of Mormon? Brother Greenwell, you ain't never even seen the Book of Mormon. What's left of that poor book after you folks got done messing with it don't tell you half of nothing. Plus, it ain't near lively enough to keep an insomniac awake. There's a whole lot of things you don't know a lick about. What things? Rudy recognized what was going on here. All kind of things. Like what? He was on to the old fox. Was not going to let himself be rattled. Consciously, he relaxed, emptied his mind, then he disconnected it before focusing again on the basket. Like the threefold division of Revelation. What's that? Rudy could play this game. You turned the shooting over to instinct. You let your body do it, your subconscious. Real shooting was Zen. The threefold division. That's what we've been talking about here. The big picture, the gospel plan. The Jews, they got the law. The Greeks, they got philosophy. And us, we got organized sports. Rudy's shot hit the rim and bounced once, twice, then a third time before finally it dropped. You mean all sports were revealed? Nah, just basketball. Basketball was your original sport. Pretty much. Well, it's like everything else. The Lord reveals the fullness, and pretty soon you got some team messing with it and saying, lo, this here is basketball. And some other team saying, nah, it's over there. Then there's a bunch telling folks the game's got to be called handball or volleyball, maybe, or horse even, or some other true and everlasting name. You mean they played this game too? They played a horse back then? Everywhere you look, spread like a weed. That's the common, it got wrote up in the Book of Mormon. Rudy planted a hand on his hip. Horse is not in the Book of Mormon. Just look it up in the index, big as life. Any half-educated Mormon knows they want no equines on this continent back then. Of course, the fella done the translating sure as judgment wasn't no basketball player. I told you, it's a crime what you folks done to that book. But it ain't no different than things in general. And back then wasn't no different than now. Everybody hunkered down with a chunk of the truth, and before you knew it, the whole world was crawling with reorganized sports, which ain't exactly a bad thing, I'm not complaining, but it sure wasn't the true order of basketball, neither. He raised up and nailed another mechanical shot. Rudy's eyes widened, but he wasn't thinking about the shot. What was that, he asked. You mean the true order? Yes. That was the whole pineapple, friend. The true order was the fullness of basketball. And you're saying it was different than now? Night and day. The ref pointed at the basket. Your shot, he said, and then kept quiet until Rudy was ready to shoot. For one thing, there wasn't no substitutions. Man got hurt, had to leave the game. You played without him. Rudy pulled back. Like rugby, he asked. The official shrugged. Rudy got himself focused again and raised the ball. Of course, teams had 9 players back then. That's baseball, Rudy looked around. Ain't baseball and you ain't been paying attention. It's your shot. How can you play basketball with 9 players? That's 18 men on the court. That's not teams, that's armies. The official nodded. Of course, near the end of the game, he was mostly down to 4 or 5, maybe less on the side. Because of injuries? The official nodded again. Injuries sometimes just tuckered out. Wasn't no half times or timeouts or like that. How long did they play? Rudy was incredulous. Games went a little longer back then. They were longer? Mostly 2, 3 days. I don't believe this. Rudy was disgusted. He'd been letting himself get sucked in by this nonsense again. He dribbled a few angry times in place and then readdressed the basket. There's one thing more. What's that? Illegal use of hands. That's football. No, it ain't. It's a football rule. Ain't hardly a rule at all. You ever seen a football game where nobody used his hands? Rudy stopped. He began to see the implication. He knew nobody could use his hands? That's what I mean. In basketball? What else we've been talking about? Shoulders, hips, fannies, heads even. Just no hands. You're talking about soccer. Some said that. Some are still saying it, but it ain't true. The only true and revealed sport is basketball. You can't play basketball without your hands. Ain't easy. You can't be serious. How did anyone score? Any way they could. He saw some serious defense back then. A basket must have been a miracle. You're not far off. Baskets was final. Any team got a basket, won. You mean every game was sudden death? Now, that's exactly what I mean. And you expect me to believe all this? Don't expect you to believe nothing you don't want to. You can go see for yourself, if you like, right down in Tenochtitlan, Mexico. I've been there. First-class facility they got. Church standard and then some. It's a real inspiration. You ought to check it out. Basket's a little higher than now, and the ball was a little heavier. About 11 pounds. Rudy's shot skipped off the rim. 11 pounds? He squeaked. He couldn't help it. Now he's down by 2. Of course, if you're in a hurry, you could just go look it up down to the line. Rudy stared at the stranger who was settling in at the foul line. He had a premonition. You mean the Aztecs, don't you? He'd read about this somewhere in a waiting room or on an airplane. He didn't remember very well, but was coming back. How do you know all this stuff? Are you some kind of archaeologist? The head case laughed. Me? He said, oh, I played some. I done a little reffing. I'm what you call a student of the game. He drew down on the hoop and sank his shot. I'll tell you one thing. He looked at Rudy with suddenly resolute eyes. I ain't never missed a playoff. Then he yielded the foul line. One more thing they had back then. What was that? They had decorum. You mean etiquette?
Yep.
No cursing? Not ever. Not a word. Those boys talked respectfully. Said yes, sir, when you called a foul. And then, if you please, the official, sir. Or if it pleased the official, sir, my esteemed opponent. Rudy curled his lip. You mean they talked like lawyers? Like a whole courthouse full. Or like politicians, maybe, or them medieval knights. There was Roman gladiators had decorum, too. You got remnants here and there in Homer, if you ever had the pleasure. Or what they call the martial arts. But not in basketball. Not no more. It's a sorry state we come to. Lawyers and politicians are slime. Rudy fired and hit the foul shot as effortlessly and automatically as his rival. Now he was in the zone again. Now he was really pissed off. Oh, it ain't so bad. They just look things a little square in the mouth in you and me. It ain't a comfort, though. Most of them are barracudas. Well, sometimes maybe it takes a barracuda. But the thing is, they're polite. They're phony. They're just kissing ass. You're just aching for a technical, ain't you? There aren't any technicals in a horse. The head case retreated to the three-point line and turned and launched a one-handed set shot that banked off the glass and missed. It wasn't even close. Nope, he conceded with irritation in his voice. Not the way you play. But what's wrong with mind and order and showing a little respect? He'd lost the lead. Now Rudy was up. Rudy would call the shots. What you will call respect, I call sucking up. Ain't the same. It's all the same. It don't sound the same to me. The way it sounds is nothing but appearance. And what you're telling me is that appearance is what matters. The way things look and not the way they are. It was time to change the pace. To liven up this game. Rudy dribbled comfortably to his right, spotted up and hit a poster-perfect jumper. Who was in the driver's seat now? The official looked suddenly tired. What I'm trying to tell you is, appearance is what we got. Oh, you hit it sometimes. Sometimes pretty as a shuttle landing. Sometimes you get in the zone, but mostly, brother, it's like riding an avalanche. He followed Rudy's route and let the jumper fly. It missed badly. His second miss in a row. Now he'd lost a horse and was only one ahead of Rudy. And that's your gospel of basketball? And that's your gospel of basketball? Pretty much. Sounds cheesy to me. Sounds like a chicken shit game. Rudy was on a roll now, rolling through the high post, headed for the same killer jump shot he'd hit the last time. Well, you don't play it real hard. The ball sailed high over the rim and out of play. I don't what? Rudy stared at the little man in disbelief. Don't take it serious. Ain't nothing much on the line. Rudy was deeply offended. Basketball is damned important to me. Basketball is my life. He jabbed an angry finger at the offender. I bust my butt to keep my game. I practice, I lift, I stay in shape. I'm down here all the time. Where's your wife? Why? Why ain't she here? She's got things to do at home. If you was playing serious basketball, she'd have been here. My wife happens to resent the time I put into this game. She thinks I'm too damn serious about basketball. She knows you're just fooling around. Your kids know it, too. Rudy had lost the lead. The crank official was up again, would go back to his irritating set shot. In the old days, they'd have been here. You couldn't have drug them away. He split the strings. In the old days, they didn't have television. Television wouldn't have had a chance. You're dreaming. Rudy returned sullenly to the geezer's lazy one-handed set. The reality, friend, is that your wife and kids show up when your wife and kids is on the line. On the line? What do you mean, on the line? I mean, winner takes all. wives and children? The stranger nodded. Greenwell looked down at his pale green ball and thought about the implications here. That's flaming bullshit, he said. You're putting me on. Then he hit the old man shot dead on with an almost violent liner off the glass. Look it up. And you're saying these were church league games? Back in the dispensation, church was the games. The games was church. And they played for women and children? They played serious. They wasn't fooling around. You expect me to believe that? That's obscene. Sometimes I don't think you got a lick of education at all. Looky here. It's just the natural consolidation of resources in a free competition market. That's all. What did you think competition was all about? Ain't you never heard of polygamy? Rudy felt cornered. He didn't like this. Well, polygamy was not like that. It wasn't some kind of competition. The derision in the stranger's face was unmistakable. I see you got the history of polygamy locked up just about as good as the history of basketball. A man takes himself 20, 30, maybe 40 wives, and you figure he's just rounding up strays? A bunch of them women was married already. Now you tell me what that is if it ain't competition. A man gets himself a controlling interest, a corner, a competitive leg up on the prime breeding stock. What is that? We're talking hostile takeover here, aggressive asset acquisition. We're talking capital formation in the procreation market. I thought you was a businessman. Rudy was stunned. He tried to regroup. Whatever the deal was, he grumbled, it's history now. Polygamy was abolished. The disdain in his interrogator's eyes hardened. Look around you, son. Pay attention. It ain't even slowed down. Polygamy is going on all the time. How many resources you know ain't restless and shifting around, or leastways looking to shift? Read the newspapers, the government statistics. What's your wife up to while you're down here keeping up your game? She's not up to anything. Rudy raised his voice. You sure now? Whole lot of fellas thought they was dead sure. Turned out dead wrong. The natural way of things. It's science. That's all I'm saying. For some people, maybe, but my wife's a good Christian woman. Well, that's different, of course. It's worse. It's them special good women get bitter and thinking they ought to find themselves the leastways adequate man. Rudy folded his arms over his chest. What's your point? Well, I was just thinking about that pretty little thing was here this evening, the one got so excited. Melanie Sarvis, what about her? That her husband she left with? Yes. She left with her husband, so? Funny, said the ref. And he scratched the back of his neck. Seemed like the way she was looking at you, she didn't much want to go. You were watching that? Rudy was incensed. I told you. I'm a student of the game. It's my job. And see, that was the beauty of the true order. With real basketball, the natural way wasn't sloppy and half-assed and devious like now. With real basketball, the redistribution of resources was like a revelation. Test destiny, right out there in the open. And the winner takes your family? Rudy was trying to imagine his wife and kids sitting in church next to triumphant Broomer Brennan with a flock of other trophy wives and children. He was trying to line up his shot. Only if you lose. Either way, it's an honor, don't you see? It counts for something. Ain't just some rinkadink fooling around. There was always a banquet afterward where awards was made, and then they had the ceremony. What kind of ceremony? Whole team got hitched. You mean a wedding? You can't be serious. Well, when you get down to it, it was a little more like an annual contract with an option. And the husbands, I mean, where were the husbands? Didn't they have to get divorced or something? Oh, they was right there. But it wasn't no problem. They didn't protest. I mean, they didn't protest? No, sir. Had other things on their minds. Like what? Like dinner. Dinner? Eating? Nah, the wedding dinner. They didn't do no eating. What are you telling me? The losers had to put on the wedding dinner? Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying. For their own wives? Yep. I'd have poisoned them. Well, you got an attitude. It's like I said, you ain't got the vision, you ain't really serious about the game. So if I was serious, I'd cook up a banquet to celebrate losing my wife and children. You would if you was told. But truth is, they didn't do no cooking. So what did they do? Wait tables? Run around filling up glasses and bringing seconds to the happy couple? That'd be the day. Well now, serving like that ain't such a bad idea, but it wasn't exactly that kind of service. So what was it? They had to pay. That's it, right? And the wedding cost a fortune. Nah, it didn't cost them no money. So if they didn't cook it, didn't serve it, didn't pay for it, how exactly did they put this dinner on? Well, you might say it was more existential-like. Rudy stared blank in comprehension at the little man. It was what? Nah, the official corrected. They was. They was what? Rudy's exasperation boiled over and he let the shot fly more out of irritated reflex than decision. It was an air ball, a debacle, missed everything but the floor. Dinner, the official replied and turned to look at Rudy Greenwell. Fee, fi, fo, fum. He chanted this slowly with an involuntary grin. It took a moment. Then Rudy slammed his official McGregor deep into the polished hardwood. He'd been had. Had again. How stupid could one human being be? He was dumber than sheetrock, lower than septic tank sludge. This country western shark had set him up like a pop can on a log and then shot him down. The pretender shook his head as Rudy pounded his humiliation into the floor again and watched the ball soar high above them. You think this is really funny, don't you? Rudy challenged. No, sir. I think it's dead serious. No, sir. I think it's dead serious. Ain't nothing much matters more than this game. And the way you fellas play, it don't matter much at all. He seemed strangely earnest. He wasn't smirked, hadn't changed his tone. There was some relief in that. But if this guy wasn't some kind of basketball hustler, he was an out-and-out nut. And whichever he was, he'd gotten ahead in this game they were playing through cunning, not skill. Rudy Greenwell looked at the basket, the situation. He was down two horses and only one shot away from defeat. He let the old fraud distract him, let him control the game with his lazy outside shooting, his dithering pace and flustering guile. Standing there, seething, Rudy Greenwell made his adjustment. He saw it all clearly now. He would do what he had to be done, would make this guy play basketball, make him hustle and perform like a player, and then they would see. Well, over the next few minutes, Rudy, who's now in the lead again, who's now calling the shots, makes some incredible baskets, a reverse layup, some other hustling player shots that the old man makes a run at. He surprises Rudy. But he doesn't quite make the shots. And before you know it, they're down to an even score. One horse apiece. Let's see here we are. They were tied up now. One horse apiece. A single surgically chosen shot would end it all, would vanquish outrage with the force of right. Layup, Rudy called. Layup now just again. But this time I bank it off the backboard through the hoop. Oh, he's calling his shots now. That is, he not only has to make the shot, but he has to tell you exactly what shot he's going to hit. He has to hit it the way he says he's going to hit it. All right. But this time I bank it off the backboard through the hoop, catch it midair underneath, and lay it up off the glass again without touching down. Rudy smiled for the first time in hours. No one else had ever, he'd heard of, nobody, not even on television, had ever made this shot. No rim, he added. He wished his wife were there. When he executed, Rudy made this marvel of invention look even easier than practice. The launch, the swish, the capture, the arching redirected ball with ravishing slow motion backspin. But also, unfortunately, just enough angle to graze the rim in its fall. Damn, Rudy winced. Nice, consoled his audience. Real nice. Just a hair long. And you're right, he conceded. This way is more of a challenge. The cracker was up again. And the rodeo clown would serve up his predictable one-handed bread and biscuit set shot until the second coming. Or until Rudy's Greenwell's concentration faltered. That was the strategy. Rudy understood this now, understood too that there was certain to be some wild new bullshit to distract him, make him stagger or miss. The wizened fraud would have to outshoot him, though, plain and simple. He was a one-shot, one-con swindler, a snake charmer who beguiled his victims in order to win. No matter what happened, neither of them would be unclear about who in that hall was playing head games and who could play basketball. The scam artist was just dribbling slowly and looking at the basket. I was thinking maybe I'd shoot a bank shot myself, but I was thinking we'd make it harder. No glass this time, and how the hell are you going to shoot a bank shot with no glass? Rudy had completely had it. He didn't want to hear any more bizarre diversionary crap. The official smiled and prodded the ball one more leisurely time toward the floor. And then, while it climbed slowly back up through the air, shot his knee out like a stiletto, catching it from the side with a crack and a velocity that startled Greenwell, impelling it like cannon shot toward the nearby wall. The ball pounded into the cinder block and then rebounded up and back toward the loafing cowboy, who stepped casually, arms folded into its trajectory, waiting, and then quite suddenly slamming it in it again with a loud snap of his runty hip. The rock thunked hard against the bone denim at his side and then banked high and away, backspinning slowly and climbing toward the basket, climbing, then soaring above the rim and floating there and spinning and drifting and falling, finally again gliding toward the hoop, plunging down like judgment, like poor hapless Adam, dropping to the hole like amen, like an avalanche, like the final lights out Armageddon court of creation, and catching nothing but air. Holy crap, gasped Rudy. What was that? The old man seemed angry. What you think it was, he said. Ain't you never seen nobody miss? Not like that. That was something else. That was good as any mile, the referee recovered. That'd be your shot. Then with a sudden burst of decision, he turned to Rudy. Tell you what, he seemed very intent. When this one's over, I'll play you another. We'll make it 2 out of 3. Rudy thought a long time. I don't know, he said finally. This could go on all night. Could go on for days even. Don't you think? Might could, said the ref. And his hanging face brightened. Just might could at that. Well, I don't know. Rudy shrugged and turned his ball in his hands. I mean, what exactly are the stakes in this game? Now the head case, cowboy referee, the cretin with arms folded over his chest, carefully measured Rudy Greenwell. In the old days, he counted slowly, your game was your life. Right, said Rudy. I remember you said that before. Then he dribbled a while in place and turned and retreated down the court. Somewhere a telephone was ringing. Somewhere behind doors and down a hall out on the far edge of hearing. It had been ringing, in fact, for a while. But as Rudy crossed out of the paint, it seemed suddenly present, seemed loud. Do you think that's your wife, maybe? The referee was standing on the baseline now, at attention, like a soldier. Rudy turned slowly and faced the basket. He squared his shoulders. I don't know, he answered, but I guess we'll find out. That's it.